Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's Serie A Awesome podcast. I am not Matteo Bonetti. Him and his wife are delivering a baby today, so it's not much of an excuse, I have to say. I think it's pretty selfish, but you know what? I've answered the call, and I'm looking forward to being involved today with Nicky Bandini and Mina Rizzucchi on Serie A Awesome. Coming up, we're going to talk about Juve. What is going on? Zlatan reaching the age of 100 and still scoring goals, which is quite an achievement. And that big game between Roma and Napoli. Let's start, though, with Juventus. What happened there? Mina, 1-0 against Benevento at home. The question is, are they more likely to catch Inter 10 points behind them right now or drop out of the top four?
I think that question is one that I don't even know how to answer because I don't know. I mean, but I would probably say that right now, and I'm trying really hard to sound like a journalist, but then I sometimes stray into the fan arena. And as a fan, I'm probably more scared of dropping out of the top four based on that performance against Benevento. I have not seen something so shocking in a very long time. And I have been someone who has criticized management a lot more for the way the situation is, for the fact that they do take decisions such as hiring Andrea Pirlo, who is very much a rookie coach, arrived only with a thesis, and that's pretty much it. And I've tried to protect him as much as possible. He does make shocking decisions. This was a shocking game, and you could call it unfortunate timing that this is the performance they produced after having a week to prepare. We've talked so much about games coming thick and fast and every 3 days and, you know, absences being something huge for Juventus. And while they continue to be huge for Juventus because they lack really any ball players and right now they could really do with Paulo Dybala, even though I haven't always been so kind about the performances that he gives Juventus. But right now, somebody who's actually comfortable on the ball would be amazing to have. And you just look at those types of performances and think to yourself, I don't know how anyone can really be spared or rescued or not criticized heavily. But the way that this team has been built, the way that Pirlo is running the ship, the attitude by certain players there, it's all shocking. There's no identity. There's no understanding. There's no genuine schemes of play. And I don't understand this because there was a lot of good in what I saw with Pirlo building. And it just seems to have capitulated in the last, I would say, 5 weeks.
Nicky, were you surprised? Because, I mean, I know that the people in Zaghi claims he'd written a speech after defeat that he'd never had to use. How big a surprise is this?
Oh, it was huge, Mark. It was huge. I think it almost needs to sort of be set in context because I'm now, I have forgotten off the top of my head exactly how long Benevento's run of games there to win was. I think 11. It was 11 games. Yeah, so 11 games there to win. They've been dropping pretty fast down the table. Look, they are not a team that was ever expected to do anything other than fight against relegation this season. So they started brightly and they've been trying to cling on to or recapture some of that momentum. But also, to Mina's point just now, Juventus, right, things haven't been perfect, obviously. They lost to Porto in the Champions League, and that was a pretty huge disappointment. But so far in this calendar year, so I'm only using the calendar year because it's a convenient way of saying recently, they've lost two games previous to this in Serie A, which was against Inter and against Napoli. It doesn't mean everything was perfect. There was lots you could have picked out and said, this could be better. There was lots of things that we were asking on this podcast about whether or not this team works for Ronaldo right now, whether or not Ronaldo blends into what Pirlo has as an idea for a team. But no one was looking at this team and thinking they were about to lose to Benevento. Nobody, because the performances were not. They were not at that level. And I think there's a few things that need to be said about that. First of all, to make sure it gets said, it's a huge result for Benevento. It's the second time ever in Serie A. They're the first newly promoted team to win away to Juventus in 8 years. The first newly promoted team to keep a clean sheet away to Juventus in 9 years. So extraordinary result. And the scenes with their president Vigorito and the sporting director Foggia after the game falling on top of each other. And then he gave the sweetest quote about how Foggia tried to lift him up, but he was saying, but I weigh 70 kilos, which he forgot. And so, and he said, and we were both lying on the stadium steps and we realized it was wonderful. And I just thought that was such a lovely phrasing. We realised it was wonderful. That was a beautiful moment for Benevento. But look, I think for Juventus, as Mina said, there's like a million things wrong with the team individually. Individual players not working, individual parts of Pirlo's system not working. But with a game like this, the bigger part of me just thinks it's just complacency. They were good enough to win this game. They probably would have if you played it 10 more times, win it 9 other times. But I think they were complacent right up until they conceded.
I mean, it's one of these games. We've seen it a few times with Juve. They're maybe not at their best, but they find a way because that's what champions do. They didn't find a way this time. And it's like anything. If a big team loses, the little team that beats them gets a few, maybe not too many headlines. It's all about what's gone wrong at Juve. So thank you to you both for pointing out that Benevento had one of the results of their lifetimes. But as far as Juve is concerned, playing devil's advocate, if I'd asked either of you to, at the start of the season, or just before the start of the season, we need you to be the Juventus coach, we're going to give you this money or whatever, you're not going to turn it down. So Andrea Pirlo was never going to turn this job down. Who is to blame for putting him in a role that so far it doesn't look like he's capable of, because he's still such a rookie?
I think that Andrea Agnelli has always prided himself of being somebody who takes a risk, who believes a lot in history and culture. And so if you do have history as a winner, if you are somebody who understands the Juve mentality, then he thinks that this is good to go. He also trusts the fact that the team he thinks is well assembled enough to perhaps not necessarily need the highest level of tactician, that it would be someone that could coast for, let's say, a year as he learns on the job. So I think that at the time when he arrived, Agnelli, he arrived obviously after, you know, Juventus had finished, twice in a row. He arrived during that period, saw the demise of Juventus finishing in seventh. It's something that's so alien to them. And one of the things he noticed was that, you know, if I bring Antonio Conte, and he had spoken to him and was so impressed with him in the interview, that he thought having that mentality, understanding what it means to wear the jersey, those stripes, that would be the right way to go. And obviously it worked out for him. And I think then he started trusting himself a lot. And he thought that, you know, when it comes to Pirlo, you know, he was so smart on the field. The team had so many good players, from Ronaldo to Federico Chiesa to the back line. He knew that there were going to be some problems because it was COVID. He perhaps thought that it wasn't going to be that they would fall so heavily. And he trusted his instincts and thought that despite the fact that Pirlo hadn't really studied, that perhaps he could be their Zidane. The difference is that Zidane had trained obviously under Ancelotti, had already worked with the youth version at Real Madrid, and had some sort of experience. So this is where I come to it, because I don't even necessarily want to blame Andrea Agnelli. I think that he's done a lot of good, and he is somebody who's actually looking at his choices and trying to take stock of the situation and see what needs to be changed. My main anger, or where I would aim my criticism, is at Nedved and Paratici. I think that they got complacent. They saw somebody like Allegri keep winning, and rather than be satisfied with how much Juventus dominated, it was like, well, let's dominate, but make it even prettier. And it's just almost asking for too much at this point. You know, it was like, let's bring in somebody who's a philosopher, let's bring in interesting players, but not give this particular philosopher, like Maurizio Sarri, the players that he might need to play the kind of football we need. We're going to buy Ronaldo and force somebody who plays a different style of football to make it all work. And I think that they've stopped knowing who they are. They've stopped understanding the direction they want to head in. They want certain things, but do not have the tools necessary to attain those things. And I think that's where the problem is. And still, even when you look at the rumors of who they're associated to in the market, it's beggar's belief that they would want to play good football when they are still targeting runners and no ball players. It's really rather beggar's belief. And so right now, I find it very hard to not aim any criticism at the way that this team has built, and especially at the job being done by Nedved and Paratici.
I think what's happened with the manager there is really fascinating, because I fully understand this idea, and we've talked about it before, of Andrea Pirlo being your club man who you think can come in and do a job based on his experience as a footballer, the way he can relate to players, in the same way as you think that you've seen Zidane do at Real Madrid. And of course, we've talked about this again before. You just skip the step of letting him coach in the youth teams first. You skip the step of letting him learn how to do the job first. And I think that's almost like a domino effect of mistakes that were made that gets you to that place. Because I think that the appointment of Maurizio Sarri last summer, who I think as a coach and as a sort of technical decision maker, he's being made to look better and better by the week, frankly, by this Juventus team, because he would have got more out of this squad than Andrea Pirlo is. But he also, from the beginning, was always a face that didn't fit. He was never this famous and much derided by rivals, but nevertheless, I think a genuine idea that Juventus have of lo stile Juve, like the Juventus style, a certain look and image and brand that you have. Sarri never fits in that sense. And I think that this whole situation would look different if whatever manager you had taken on when you hired Sarri after Allegri had been someone who could do the job for at least 2 years. If that person could hold the job for 2 years, then Pirlo gets his year with the youth team at least. And then you're looking at a completely different set of decisions that you're making this summer coming up. But because that year with Sarri, even though it broadly ended okay, you won the league, you got at least that bar and achieved it quite comfortably in the end. I know everyone talks about 1 point, but it was done weeks early. I feel like that extra year that you've lost has kind of had a knock-on effect for all the decisions that you've made next.
I want to talk more, and I never thought I'd be saying this. Will Juve get into the top four, or will they finish in the top four? It seems ridiculous to even say, but with a resurgent Napoli now just a couple of points behind, it is something I want to discuss with you. But first, our new ESPN FC Italian experts. He's got one or two things in his CV that kind of allows him that title. Alessandro Del Piero, a former Juve legend, had some strong words to say when he spoke to us on ESPN FC about Juve's defeat to Benevento and what's going wrong at the club.
Well, apparently a lot of things is wrong. What happened today, the mistake by Arthur, is not what you need to be focused on, but it's a fact. Like, it's a fact that it happened in the Champions League with Bentancur against Porto. So this lack of, I don't know how to call them. I mean, the concentration, lucidity, clear in your mind what you have to do, how you have to deal with kind of stuff. It's worrying. And the result is worrying. I spoke a lot about unity, right? About Napoli or Roma, and you will hear me a lot talking about that, because in order to win, you need to have something more than the other ones. What happened in Juve now is a lot of confusion, and it doesn't look, when you see them play, they doesn't look together in what they're doing.
Strong words, Mina. Is he hitting the nail on the head?
Yeah, I think that unity is a problem. I think that we've talked about the fact that there is a sort of a complacency about Juventus. And I don't want to criticize this particular thing, because I understand that winning for 9 years in a row, it sometimes is just too much. And you'll see sort of teams step off a little bit when they continue to win. But it's never really been... I've never seen such a dramatic fall with Juventus, especially because the team has been regenerated. There are a lot of players there that want to make the difference, from Kulusevski to Chiesa to youngsters we mentioned who really want to come in and do something special. I think this is interesting, because when Sarri arrived, there was this point where you found Bonucci speaking to him, where you found Ronaldo sort of scoffing at him and looking like he was just annoyed by everything the coach had said. And I remember Agnelli had picked up on these things, and this is one of the reasons why they decided to go for Andrea Pirlo. They thought Pirlo's name would be somebody that would unite the team, would make it all a lot more interesting, because he was this young and vibrant guy with a desire and a philosophy, and he wanted to put it all together, and they might respond to that rather than being annoyed by Maurizio Sarri. Of course, it hasn't gone that way. I don't know what is there in you know, behind sort of the scenes, whether or not the players are happy or perhaps they're too happy. I don't know whether it's a team that needs to feel its fan base or the criticism aimed at it, because Ronaldo loves his criticism and that makes a difference. But I go back to the fact that at the end of the day, when you do have a philosophy and you are insisting on playing out from the back when you don't really have the players to do so, when you're insisting on a philosophy that doesn't have the right men or the right personnel to make it work. I think there's been a lot of absences, so it's not like luck hasn't played a part. But in general, I would go back to the fact that the team hasn't been well built. And my worry about them finishing in top four stems from the fact that they have very big games coming up, from Milan to Inter to Atalanta, Fiorentina, which is a team they collapse to. We'll speak about them later, but there's a lot of big games there, and I'm not entirely sure this complacent Juventus and the tactical wizardry that doesn't exist on Pirlo is really one that doesn't make you worry at night about whether or not they can indeed finish in top four.
There was, I think we're going to talk about it more later in the show, but there was an appearance on Sunday night by a former Juventus manager, Max Allegri, on Sky Calcio Club, which is a big evening show on Italian Sky Sport. And boy, it was quite some timing coming right after this defeat. But I thought there's so many interesting threads of this, which is why we're going to come back to it later. But it just, I was thinking, one of the sort of standout lines that came out of it was this idea that you have, as a manager, two jobs, almost, the way Allegri put it. There's a Monday to Saturday manager whose job is to manage the team and deal with training. And then there's a Sunday manager who just needs to be reactive, who needs to understand how to navigate the different situations that come up in a match. And that, as he, I think he's talked about this before, honestly, he's talked about it a lot through his time as a career. It's not something you can find in books. It's not something that's written down. It's something that you have to just be able to do, is be instinctive and react. And look, there's a bit of self-aggrandizement in there about his own ability, and that's what all managers are going to do. But I do think the thing that keeps standing out with this Juventus team when they do run into difficulty is Pirlo doesn't have the and it's not just instinct. Managers aren't born with these things. It's experience as well. He doesn't have the ability to pull rabbits out of hats. And sometimes that's what you need to do. Sometimes that makes it sound like it's harder than it should be, actually, against a team like Benevento. You just need to be able to do something smart. And it feels like he doesn't have that. And that is making the difference in the end in these situations. As to the top four thing, because I don't think I've actually said anything about that yet, I think it's pretty open now. I still expect Juventus to get in. As I said earlier, their results since the start of this year have actually been pretty good overall. And I think losing sight of that because of one embarrassing defeat is a bit silly. But it feels like this was the weekend for me when the title really did stop being the thing that you were thinking about with this club. And the competition for those top four positions is now, it's really tight. Napoli are finding some form. Atalanta have never really let up from the form they've had. Lazio are there. Roma are dropping, but they're still part of that conversation. It's going to be a down-to-the-wire situation, and Juventus need to be attentive to it, because missing out on the title after 9 years, it's a big story, but it's not a catastrophe for who you are as a club. Dropping out of the Champions League, that's a pretty major blow to your identity.
At least Juve still has Inter to play, and I know there's a 10-point gap. And look, I think it'll be a bigger shock if Juve don't get into the top four than it was Benevento winning at Juve, which was a huge shock.
If Juventus don't make the big top four, that will be the biggest story in Italian football in a very long time.
Massive. But I just think, I don't think Juve will win the title now, but there's still something that I wouldn't rule them out in having a say, because when you're 10 points behind, still having to play Inter, they have one thing that none of the other clubs that are competing against them has, and that's the experience of winning it over 9 years. The good thing from an Inter perspective could be that they end up so far ahead. It's like a golfer who doesn't really have the pressure in a final round because he's 5, 6, 7 shots clear. You can still throw that away, but if it's Milan that's putting the pressure on Inter, who knows what can happen elsewhere, Mina?
You see, this is the thing. I feel like the way that for Juventus to come out of this, frankly speaking, is if they start collaborating together with the coach, where we throw away ideas about the type of game that we're supposed to play and try to play the game that suits everyone. Pirlo talks a lot about sacrifice and people needing to do, you know, give everything for the win. At the end of the day, we are talking about champions there. So I think you're constantly asking people to sacrifice. It's not going to work. So what you need to do is simplify everything, take a more pragmatic approach and collaborate. You know, you have Bonucci, you have Chiellini, you have all these players in the dressing room, from Ronaldo, obviously, even your Dybala who's injured, but and just take an approach. You know, what do we need to do to push forward? This is our reputation on the line. This is Ronaldo's reputation on the line. This is Pirlo's reputation on the line. So I think at the moment they need to throw away everything and focus on the fact that this has to be a collaborative effort. They need to all be there and understand what they can do best to try to win as much as they can over the next 10 or 12 weeks. And I think that if we stop concentrating on trying to play this philosophy or finding a way of how we can make Bernardeschi a fullback and just concentrate on just the basics, then I think they will make top four. I mean, it is worrying when you look at the schedule list, but like you said, Juventus is still Juventus. They can still challenge anyone. There's always the ability that Inter have to be Pazza Inter, but if they do let up, my money would still be on Milan taking that spot over Juventus.
Final word on Juve for you, Nikki, before we head elsewhere throughout Italy on Serie Awesome.
I don't know. I think there's so many words to be said about all sorts of sort of individual players.
Keep it Disney.
Things that aren't working. But I honestly, before this game, I was literally on air talking about the fact that I thought people had perhaps gone a bit too soon on the this title race is over conversations, and that if. And that Juventus would beat Benevento because that seemed like an obvious result. And then there would be 7 points and they would still have that head-to-head to come. And, you know, it's not so crazy. And I think this was the week for me that really I just looked at it and thought, I can't see it anymore. This was the chance. You had the game in hand. And with the Inter Sassuolo game getting suspended, this was the chance to effectively get rid of that game in hand and make it 3 points, which seemed less daunting than having to do that against Napoli. So, yeah, it's a big, big missed opportunity for me.
Even more befuddlement this week than you normally get with Kay Murray and Matteo Bonetti, but that's what happens when Benevento go and upset the odds and win at Juventus. Next on Serie Awesome, we're going to talk a little bit about Milan and their excellent win in Florence against Fiorentina. And Nicky, they went a goal up early through Zlatan. Half-time, 1-1. Fiorentina got back into it. But then when Fiorentina went ahead, you kind of thought, OK, this will tell us what kind of Milan we're dealing with. And they showed us 2 goals, 3 points, and a come-from-behind win. How impressed were you by them?
Yeah, this was one of the most fun games to watch all season, I think. I mean, as you said, the lead changes hands twice. We had some marvellous stuff from not just Ibra, but another player who perhaps we think of more from a past generation almost, Frank Ribery. So you've got those two old sages showing up the kids a little bit. Brilliant free kick for Fiorentina's second goal. It was a really, really fun game of football. Definitely heaps of character from Milan. I will say, by the way, that Ibrahimovic, who was brilliant and also hit the bar, I have no idea how his first goal was allowed to stand. He comes back and exactly. Just shoves the defender. I have no idea how that didn't get picked up. But he played very well and, as I said, did hit the bar as well. It's the story of this Milan team all season, I think, that they've had resilience, that they've had this ability to keep finding something more from the resources that they have. I think the fact, again, yes, Ibra gets the first goal, but then it's Brahim Diaz and it's Çalhanoğlu. It's reminding you of the depth and the number of different players they've had scoring goals for them at different times this season. They are a remarkable story who, in contrast to Juventus, we didn't expect them necessarily even to be in the top four this season. But this was a big show of character after some recent results. And I think this was also a game, slightly less romantically, but nevertheless true. This was also one of those games where you thought to yourself, Europa League, tired legs all over again. Mm-hmm. Like, how much is it making a difference? And to keep sort of at this point of the season, finding those resources, even when you're playing so many games, is all the more impressive.
Keeps them within 6 points, Mina, of Inter, albeit with a game more played, but they're there. And with results like that, it looks like they're going to stay hanging around.
You see, this is what it's so interesting. They are obviously have dropped out of the Europa League. They do now have a full week to prepare for each match, like Inter, like Juventus. And I thought that this was an interesting match from so many different ways, because I think that we saw against Manchester United in the Europa League that they are a very good team, that they are so well assembled, that every single player on that pitch understands their role, understands the schemes and the tactics that Pioli's asking of them. And that allows teams to sacrifice, allows, you know, like Pirlo keeps saying, it allows everyone to sort of take their stand and be the hero when they need to be, and at the same and other ways also be the team player. I think that when you look at how much certain players have grown, the unity within the side, the fact that Zlatan, we didn't know whether he could play 30 minutes against United, but he played the full game against Fiorentina, and he was so desperate to stay on, so desperate to have his say. I think that you felt the absence of Calabria because Dalot is not going to be the same type of player. But I thought what was so interesting about this match is that they have the one player that for me just makes my heart sing. I mean, Frank Kessié is amazing, but the fact that they got Bennacer back, that just made a huge difference. And you could just see how Milan elevated on a tactical level as soon as he came onto the pitch. And my God, how his absence has been felt, because he hasn't been around very long. He was around when they kept winning game after game. The way he filters, the way he understands his positioning, the way that he just meshes with Milan's tactics makes all the difference. Of course, he did come back and they, you know, it was, I think, February 12th. I think it was the game against Spezia, and it was all very unfortunate. But having him there, having the inspiration of Calhanoglu, who when he turns it on is so special to watch, having Ibrahimovic not feel isolated and have all of this around him, including Brahim Diaz, it is like Nikki says, it's the depth. You know, when you look at Juventus and you look at Inter, they have very, very good players up front. But what Milan have is a lot of alternatives. You know, they do have your Castillejo and Salamakers on, you know, in wide areas. You have Ibrahimovic, Mandzukic, Hauge, Brahim Diaz, Calhanoglu, a lot of different Rebic, different tactics, different people made for different games. And I think that that's where you see the depth really shine. But having players like Calabria, Bennacer, Teo Hernandez, Ibrahimovic, they're all playing and they're all singing. This Milan side, for me, is the best team to watch in Serie A and the team that really deserve the position that they are now. It's going to be tight with Inter because obviously Inter know how to dominate and they are probably most likely going to win the title. But I really do hope that Milan stay in that race and make it competitive, because for everything they've done this season, they deserve it.
Well, it's nine points and the head-to-head to Inter. So that is really tough. I just wanted to pick up quickly off Mina's mentioning Bennacer, because there's almost two stories in that one, which is the one disappointing note almost. I suppose maybe you might add Romagnoli, but that the one clearly disappointing note in Milan's season for me has been Sandro Tonali, which is interesting because that's almost probably the reason, if you'd asked me at the beginning of the season, what are you excited to see about Milan? I might have named Tonali right up there at the top. I was excited to see him come together in my head in a midfield three, maybe with Bennacer and Kessié, and it hasn't worked for him yet. That doesn't mean it won't. He's a very young player. There's a lot of time left. But the difference when he went off and Bennacer came on, I mean, I'd love to see even just the possession numbers, honestly, for those last 30 minutes or so of the game when Bennacer's on, because it felt to me like everything went through him, and he can be that sort of player.
Can we also mention Tomori? Like, what a performance that was. I mean, firstly, you know, it was off the line. You know, that's how he started the game, making rescuing Milan. And the way that he came forward and barged forward to ensure that they got that third goal, you know, initiated that whole play for me, for a player that's just arrived. I mean, I would have thought this would need a long time, a while for the player to really settle in. But it's it's amazing how when you have tactics that work and a scheme that people can understand and players can get on board with, how much easier their job becomes and how much easier it is for them to make a difference. And this, I think, is the great pride that Pioli should hold over this, because these players find it easy to make the difference because they understand what is being asked of them. They understand where their teammates are going to be at all times and how they can help the side. And that, for me, is... It is, you're right. I mean, it's too difficult for them to overcome Inter at this stage, but I do hope that they don't lose second place considering these types of performances that they are managing. And they haven't won. This is what they had come into this game having only won 2 out of 10. But I think the loss against United made them feel, you know what, we are good. And this was a good performance. And we're going to try really hard to show you guys that we are still Milan. And we went off the boil a little, but we're back.
Part of being a football fan is... the delight that comes with a win, the misery that comes with a defeat. But it's also looking at the fixture list coming up and psychologically, oh, we'll beat them. So Milan's next four games, three of them are at home. Sampdoria at home, Parma away, Genoa at home, and Sassuolo at home. So that gets you excited. And then you look at the recent home record. Lost to Inter, drew with Red Star, drew with Udinese, lost to Napoli, and lost to Man United. It's like with Milan this season, the times you're not quite expecting them to get something or do that well in a game, they surprise you. But it's games at home, which a lot of people would call potential banana skins when they're expected to win. That's when they usually throw in a dud or two. But if they can take care of those next four games, where do you think that leaves them, Nikki?
Well, it's a really interesting point, because if you remember earlier this season, Stefano Pioli was saying, maybe the fact that we don't have fans at San Siro is a benefit because we've got all these young players, and maybe just not having the pressure of dealing with that is a difference for us, is a good thing. It means that our players can just play. And conversely now, when you read out their home record, of course, a part of you thinks, would it be different if you had, probably with the way the season's gone, something close to a full house at San Siro, so 80,000 fans or near to it cheering you on in these moments. Yeah, it probably would make a difference. These things do affect footballers, even though sometimes it can feel very hard to pin down how much or even really fully explain why sometimes. I think one of the things that stood out to me after this game was Ibrahimovic, of course, talking about the Scudetto still. So even though I've just said I don't think that they've still got the chance, Ibrahimovic still talking about it. And Pioli, when he was asked about it, saying, look, I'm really happy that Ibra's still talking about it. Because in the end, Pioli can think it or not think it's possible. But the idea that this player, who's the leader within his squad, at least sort of in terms of what he represents, is still taking that mentality, still got the mindset of we're trying to do this, I think it matters. Even if they don't win it, it matters just for keeping up that agitation around the team bit.
It's funny, this fan business, because I think that your psychology needs or doesn't. I think you always want your fans and you always need them. And I think they're especially important for teams that are either fighting against relegation and want to have them on board. Perhaps not Italian fans when you're fighting relegation, because they can be too critical. But, you know, generally speaking, when you are a young squad, I can imagine that you would want to be on the pitch and not have anyone sort of aiming any criticism at you and allowing you to just play your game sort of in silence. And then you can hear the instructions of your teammates around you. It facilitates everything. But I also think that when it is a long season, and I feel like it's been so long, I don't know whether it's just mixed together with last season. But for Milan, ever since, you know, after lockdown and they've emerged, they have been tremendous to watch. And I feel like they're still running. And this is, you know, having played Europa League from the very beginning, you know, qualifying for that competition, playing every 3 days. I think it's been exhausting. And now I think their kids or this young squad would really benefit from having, like you said, a full San Siro, just pushing them on this final stage. Come on, guys, you know, we've got just a few games left and we can really make the difference. But, you know, for everything that they are, whether they finish in second or whether they actually manage to overcome everything and then win the title, which may be a little bit far-fetched at this season, I mean, we can't take away from the fact that this has been truly magnificent from them and something that they can take further on. Because if this team has improved this much over the course of, what, less than a year, then just imagine what they can do next season. And when you see the potential future of what may happen at Inter or may happen at Juventus. This is a side that actually looks like they have a project. They have now a clear understanding of the direction they want to go in. The directors all seem to be on board with the same direction, which we haven't seen in a long time, and players that keep developing in a unit that's very harmonious. So a lot going on. But I guess Fiorentina's is also a talking point today.
Yeah, I wanted to end this section by comparing myself to Cesare Prandelli, because I'm an old bloke that's been brought in from the cold, and next week I'll be replaced by the guy who was here before. That'll be Bonetti, but it's Iacchini who's going to replace Prandelli. So just thought I'd do that and try to get a story for myself so we could kind of link to Fiorentina in a seamless way. I think Iacchini's probably got more hair than me. Prandelli's got better hair. But why are they 14th? I don't get this. We commentate on them over in the States for ESPN, and they've got so many quality players. Castrovilli, the balletic presence in midfield, and they're 14th. Why?
I there's a long list of reasons for it. I think, unfortunately, Cesare Prandelli probably wasn't the right appointment for them at the time, but it's sort of it's a complicated topic to talk about. He's given this statement as he's stood down, which is really beautiful and honest and open and sad, because he talked about this shadow that he's been feeling within himself and what was not described explicitly as depression, but which sounded like sort of an allusion to that, certainly to my reading, but in any case, certainly a feeling of dissatisfaction and something beyond football, something that isn't easy to talk about when you're feeling it, and especially when you're feeling it while doing a job that is and has been your dream job, that has been the club that you love the most, that has been the place that you wanted to be, that has been the place that you felt most at home in your past. And I thought it was a really moving letter that he wrote. It was a very honest and just open thing to say all of that. And he also made this comment about football being something that he doesn't see himself in anymore. And I think that was something that must be incredibly hard to say as someone who's devoted your whole life to it. Remember, he was a player before he was a manager, and I thought it was a really extraordinary standing down letter, and perhaps a good thing even for Fiorentina as well, if he feels like that and is able to see that he's not able to do the job as well as he needs to. But I don't know, the team has obviously suffered for the loss of Federico Chiesa. It has obviously struggled to get the most out of some of those talents, like you mentioned, Castrovilli, who I have thought so highly of, but hasn't come on this year in the way that I thought he might, actually, without Chiesa there to take the spaces from him. It might be that Prandelli wasn't the right man to do that next stage of development. Iacchini, they had already decided, was not the right man to do that stage, and that's why Prandelli came in. But I understand at this point of the season, he's still on the books. This is very common in Italy. When managers get fired, they don't really get fired. They get put on gardening leave. It's a practical decision to get through the last 10 games of the season. I don't think they're going to get relegated. They are going to finish much lower than they should. But a different manager and a different approach next season is almost inevitable, I think.
I think that it's interesting because, you know, the questions of Fiorentina have always been asked because they do have very good players. And I think obviously bringing back Prandelli, while, you know, at times you think, is this the right decision or not? The performances haven't been bad against Milan. I thought that they were, you know, they were quite good. You know, they were interesting, a team. And they thumped Juventus. Their performances haven't always been good. I think there's something there when it comes to mentality as well that needs to be addressed. I think that the president is having a hard time because, you know, he had all these big ideas, you know, for stadiums, for building Fiorentina and launching it into the new century, you know, making this a club that was interesting and modern And he is being really stopped by all the red tape in Italy, by the bureaucracy, by not being able to really fulfill the plans and the ambitions that he had for this club, because he certainly had them. And I think that he feels disappointment, and that is sort of being spread around in the club. They do have the seventh highest wage bill. They do have very good players and their own, you know, muse in Frank Ribery. And it all never seems to come together. They did try hard to keep Chiesa, and it's not like they were outstanding last season either with him. And now they've lost him, and it just seems like you don't really know what the future holds for this side. Mm-hmm. It is, I mean, when you do have just, what, 10 games left, you can bring back Iacchini. It's not worth going and starting something new from now. But I'm a little bit worried about where this is all going. And I'm just, I guess I just feel a little bit sad that Prandelli no longer feels that his place is in football. But I think he'll always be remembered as one of the greats.
Well, they had the opportunity for Fiorentina, but they couldn't take it. And it was Milan that got the victory in Florence. So victories for Milan and for Benevento, surprisingly, against Juve. Next on Serie Awesome, we're going to talk about a fine game that took place at Stadio Olimpico between Roma and Napoli. That's next. Good win for Napoli, 2-0 at Roma. Unbeaten in five and now just 2 points behind Juventus. If they get a place in the top four, Nikki, who misses out? Because they're not far away now.
I think it's probably Roma who's going to miss out. The results against the top... everyone talks about it being against the top four or the top six. I think it's like the top eight they haven't beaten yet this season. In the end, are going to weigh them down, I think. Napoli have come good as well at a pretty important moment. They've found a groove, which I think is going to carry them to one of those top four spots. They've always had the talent, but this was a reminder, I think, this game, of some of the things that haven't always been there for them this season. Dries Mertens has had this ongoing ankle issue that's kept him out of a lot of games, and this was one of his games. Scored a really beautiful opening goal. Then got the second goal as well. He's now the third player ever to go over 100 goals in Serie A for Napoli. He's almost been overshadowed this season by other stuff that's going on at the club, and because he hasn't been there a lot, and because we've talked a lot about Lorenzo Insigne and a lot about Chucky Lozano when he was doing well early this season, and a lot about Victor Osimhen and his own ups and downs, even though he's also missed a lot of games. But Dries Mertens, when he's switched on, is still, even though he's beginning to get up in years, he's still brilliant. And I think that's something we've talked about a few times again already this season, is when you look at the depth of talent in that Napoli team, it's a lot, especially up front. It's a lot of talent that they have compared with some of the other teams they're fighting with for those places. And I think all of that, on top of the fact that Gattuso seems to have flicked a switch somewhere for Piotr Zielinski these last month or two, because Zielinski has always been an incredibly talented player, but I think he's been sensational over the last couple of months. It's just, again, a question of timing, but I think Napoli are going to take one of those spots. And if Napoli are in, and Inter are in, and Milan are probably in, but maybe they're not. They've also been dropping points. But either way, you've got Milan, Juventus at that point, and Lazio to compete with. Roma, to me, do look a bit like the odd team out in that picture.
Wait, so hold on. Who is your top four?
It's changing by the day. I think it's still Inter, Milan, Juventus, and I think Napoli. But again, I didn't even say Atalanta just now. Yeah. Atalanta are playing well enough to be there as well. So... yeah, it's going to go to the wire for sure.
This was this for me was a perfect storm of a game, because I feel like Napoli have really been stepping up their gear, and I don't know whether it's their media blackout that's almost helping them, and it's like some weird coincidence, but they have really stepped up their game. I do think the absences that they've had for a long time, you know, when you see players coming back in just four, that makes a difference. I've always said absences make a difference. I have a question with their mentality, because when Napoli are good, I think it's very hard to find many teams that play better football than they do. But when they're bad, it's almost catastrophic. And then that's where you feel like there's a mentality issue there, that they're not people that are very good at handling a bad situation, that they don't necessarily always know how to overcome a bad patch. And I think that we've seen that. So consistency has been somewhat of a problem in recent years. But when you do allow them that opportunity to dominate a game, and you can see the beauty and the quality of your Insignias and your Politanos and Dries Mertens, of course, then everything changes. And I think this is a game in which Fabian Ruiz felt complete control and able to provide and inject the creativity that he does. I think Demme is just a fantastic. I'm such a fan of this player. But it is Zielinski. It is all about Zielinski and the vertical edge that he has and produces. And I just feel like this team right now, it purrs when it is facing a side that perhaps has a psychological issue. And I just, when I see the way that Roma is playing right now, they are, can I just note that they are the only Italian team left in Europe. And for that, they need to be applauded, because it's just been an abomination when it comes to Italian sides in Europe this season. But they are a side that did play on Thursday, and they did indeed win. And they have come into this perhaps maybe a little bit more exhausted than Napoli would be at the stage. And yet you just, you see these players running at them and their defense unable to do anything. It was passive. They do play a specifically high line sometimes, which doesn't really work with the players that they have at the back. There are tactical issues that need to be addressed, but and a mentality issue, you know, I did write this down. It's 3 points in 9 games against the best of Serie A, which, and these 3 points have come from draws, you know, draw against Juventus, a draw against Milan. And I think that when they have faced Napoli, and they obviously, the reverse fixture was 4-0, and this one, it just, I'm surprised that it only remained at 2-0, because I do think that they struggle against that type of play, and there are problems that need to be addressed in this Roma side. But I do not want to take anything away from Napoli. I do think Gattuso is working perfectly in trying to make sure that this side is geared up to face the opponent. So if they need to close up at the back, like they did against Juventus, and play a game that's not of their level, they will happily do that. But likewise, when they have an opportunity to purr like the engine that they are, they did do that against Roma. But my issue, I guess, with all of this is that I just hate the fact that Fonseca is once again being put and told that he needs to finish in top four. Otherwise, this is a detrimental season, because, like I said, he is the only coach that's managed to stay in Europe. This is a side that has a certain problem at the back, for sure. They don't compress as well as they should. They don't defend or offer enough support to the back line. But they also a side that just doesn't have the quality of players that I think demands a top four finish, even though their wage bill is, what, the second or third highest, I believe, in Serie A. But just goes to show you that it's not very well-managed side.
I think
I mean, you've got, sorry, Nicky, you've got 6 points that's separating 5 clubs right now, and Roma are obviously involved in this. But it just shows you how hard it is to have success or compete on different fronts. And as you mentioned, Roma being the only team left in Europe, they're going to have this Thursday, Sunday again. And it's not much time to recover from that.
Yeah, I think the Europa League is documented, not just in Serie A, it's documented all across European leagues. Playing that Thursday, Sunday schedule is statistically proven to damage your results. It just does. It's a very grueling, demanding schedule. Statistically proven, maybe overstating it, but certainly a strong correlation, shall we say, because correlation is not always causation, but there is a demonstrated correlation between teams playing in the Europa League and suffering domestically. I think I have complicated feelings on Fonseca at this point, because I have been quite a fan of his. I like some of the things he's tried to do. And I also, whilst I a big believer in everything that goes on at Coverciano and the manager's school, and indeed Renzo Oliveri, who leads the teaching courses there, I think that Italian football can be quite insular and quite closed and quite prone to thinking that only Italian managers, or if not Italian managers, managers who were players in Italy, like Sinisa Mihailovic. If you're not from there, then you can't do it there. And I think that over time, that insularity might be contributing towards things like disappointing results in Europe. And what a coincidence that Fonseca is the one still in Europe. But at the same time, that thing of not being able to pull out one win against the top eight side, the longer it goes on, the more damning I find it. Because to come back to the Allegri thought from earlier in the podcast, sometimes you've got to be that manager who can react on a Sunday and make something happen. And he hasn't in those games.
I think that you hit the nail on the head. You know, I've defended Fonseca a lot, but not because I think that he is without fault. Like I said, you know, I've already mentioned the things that I think that defensively he hasn't gotten right necessarily. I also think that there seems to be an issue with how players respond to him. He seems to have fallen out with Dzeko. Pellegrini sort of went against him in the post-match comments and said, well, I don't see it in the same way. I don't think it's a question of mentality. And then went on in his comments to sort of agree with them. So I don't really understand what happened there, because Fonseca came out after the match and said, I'm really angry with the way that this team managed this, you know, with the game. And we were just so passive, and there was just, you know, this element of desire to play the game. And Pellegrini said, you know, well, yeah, we were deep and we need to learn not to be passive. Then it is a question of mentality, because the performance was greatly shifted in the second half. Not greatly, but there was a difference in the second half, and Roma were a lot better. So I don't know how the players seem to be going with Fonseca. There does seem to be maybe perhaps a rift going on there. And having said all of that, I do think that Roma as a club need to address a few issues. For one, in that club, it always seems to be the coach's fault, never the player's fault. There's always this massive protection of players that they don't seem to have for their coaches. And secondly, they need to really write down as a business what their intentions are, what their ambitions are, what they are, and how they seek to attain these objectives. You know, you want to be a top four club, then what are you doing to do that? It's not having the third highest wage bill, but perhaps, you know, building adequately, organically, bringing in the right directors, making sure everyone's on board. But it's sort of like they've just put a lot of jigsaw pieces together, and when it doesn't work out, they just blame one individual, because it's easier to blame one individual than looking at the whole picture. But only well-managed sides are the ones that do well. And there's a difference. And it's not just purely that made Milan amazing. It's the whole team working together. It's having a philosophy, an idea, and how to go about getting those objectives together. It's getting Maldini finally on board with Gazidis that makes the difference. Players that understand what their objectives are. That's what happened with Juventus. That's what happened with Inter. You want to be a top four side? Then show me the potential of your management to work as a unit and not just shake your head in the stands when Roma weren't doing well, like we saw from Roma management. I thought that was abysmal, frankly.
Just to wrap up this section in Serie A, there seems to be a theme this week about managerial issues. We started with Andrea Pirlo, then we went to the very emotional Cesare Prandelli, and now we're talking about Paolo Fonseca. But we're not talking about Rino Gattuso anymore. He's like the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer of Italian football. He's under pressure. Will he keep his job? Phone-ins are plenty saying, what's going to happen to him? Five without defeat in Serie A, four wins, and no one's talking about Gattuso anymore. And that's the way I like it, because he's a good kid. He's married to a lovely young Scottish girl. And
that's why you love him.
Yeah, he would wear shorts. Look at him. It's like a strip show every game that Napoli play over the winter time. He starts with the jacket. I'm not doing this because I'd get harpooned. But he starts with that. This comes off, the short sleeves and everything like that. Gattuso is the Italian Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. One defeat and he'll be out, according to some. Leave him alone, please. Now, normally ahead of commentary on ESPN over here in the States, we get the team news, and it's pretty easy to decide who's playing where and which formation. But doing Hellas Verona-Atalanta at the weekend and getting the lineup for Atalanta, La Dea had four centre-backs, four midfielders, central midfielders, and they ended up playing a back four for the first time since 2016. And they won, Mina. Good old Mr. Gasparini.
Yeah, I mean, it's just that you never know what to expect from him, because, and I think that was the whole point, but because I think Verona's confusion led to them being a little bit out of the game for a while, because they're just thinking, what's going on around here? But this just goes to show you that Gasperini has got such a grip over his team that he can now just change things so easily. Everyone really understands their role. And much like Mr. Allegri used to say, the formations don't matter. It's about you understanding what you're supposed to do throughout the game.
Seamless transition to Mr. Allegri. I mean, it's like you've done this before. He's appeared on Sky Italia over the last 24 hours or so and kind of dropped one or two grenades and hints that he might be up for a return to management next season. Nicky, let's start with you. What do you make of his comments, and where would he be best suited to go or maybe even return?
Isn't that a leading question? I think he's a very adaptable manager who could be well suited to lots of different jobs. And that's kind of his strength. That's kind of one of, I don't want to distill down his chat on Sunday, because they covered so much ground. He talked about everything from the sorts of players he loves, some of his favorite players to coach, like Ronaldinho and even Clarence Seedorf, even though he said that he could be difficult. And he talked about the restructuring of fourth tier Italian football. It was a wide ranging conversation, but he definitely did talk about this idea that perhaps too many managers are let their reputations be made by their players, and that he is still the same mindset of in Italy, there's this divide between giochisti, which is people who are all about the play and the style, and risultatisti, which is people who are about the results, and that he's still in the results camp. And he is that adaptable manager. He is someone who likes to react and make differences and work with the players that he has. And I think that that means he could be a good fit in lots of places. I think there is certainly a significant contingent of Juventus fans who'd be delighted to see him back. There is a part of me that, even though I think he is a great manager, does always have that thought of, it doesn't often go great when you go back, does it? There's not many managers who go back and make a success in their previous clubs. Maybe. I think that another club we've just mentioned, Roma, would do very well to have him. But
really,
that's going to be a very tricky ask. For me, for me, he deserves to be at a Champions League club. For me, he deserves to be at a club that's competing for the title. It's extraordinary that a manager who had won consecutive titles doesn't have a job 2 years later. And so I think he should be at a club playing in the biggest competitions. But any club would be lucky to have him, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that it's interesting, because I've always loved certain coaches, Fabio Capello being one. Not necessarily perhaps what he says off the pitch, and some of the things that he says is always a bit out there for me. But Allegri is somebody that I have appreciated for the way that he speaks, for the results that he gets, for his just matter of fact ways. Everything has always been delivered in a very classy, non-dramatic way. I think that he just happens to see things for what they are, and it's almost like he has a monotone when it comes to his emotions. They just, perhaps because I don't possess this particular skill, because I am so dramatic, that it's so nice to be able to sort of sit and listen to a man who just seems to understand football and understand life, I guess. So when he talks, you just feel, I cannot believe a club like Juventus, who had experienced so much success, would have let go of this man. And I know that it did come to a natural end, and he did indeed speak about that, saying, you know, I mean, it just sort of stopped working, I guess, for us, and they felt that they wanted a change. And while it all made sense at the time, you look back and you can't help but feel a little bit of nostalgia. I think what's so interesting about this is that Italy has been going through this change in which, you know, they just feel that they were very traditional, that they love their pragmatic coach. You know, sometimes it was just too defensive for them, that they didn't feel that they had the quality, the speed of play, the speed of execution that would really rattle or make a difference in Europe. And this was a whole case of, let's move on to what Sacchi's been talking about for the last like 15,000 years. You know, let's take a step up, let's play from the back, let's be inspired by what we're seeing around us. You know, your Pep Guardiola's, your Jurgen Klopp's, your, you know, the philosophers of the game who understand how to mold their players to do something in But what I think is very hard is that Italy has a very strong identity. And I think the change is almost being, which is what Allegri said, that the players are being sort of used as instruments to show, oh, this is my philosophy and I'm going to force a team to play this way, even if I don't have the right personnel for it. And these wonderful philosophers from your Pep Guardiola's to whatever have also experienced criticism. They've spent a lot of money, not necessarily bought about the Champions League trophies that perhaps Manchester City is due. But even he has taken a more pragmatic approach to Manchester City this season and understood where the line is, you know, and what can be bettered. And I think that what Italy is trying to do is almost escape their tradition so far and just go the other way and not actually look at what they have. So you can't ask, you know, you can't ask a team like Juventus that has, you know, players like Chiellini and Ronaldo to play a certain way. And when they don't, get angry about it. At the end of the day, this is why you put and you marry certain coaches to certain teams, because it depends on the players you have. They have to be central to the project. You have to look at what you have and then create a team based on that. And I think that's something that Pioli's done so well. It's rather amazing that the pragmatic coaches right now in Serie A are the ones that are getting the results. It isn't bad football if you're winning. It's just looking at what you have. And if you do want to play the kind of football that Sarri produced, then give him your Lorenzo Insignias and the Politanos and the Dries Mertens and the Fabian Ruizes. But without a certain level of players available, then you must not demand something or a huge rejection of your identity to chase what you think modern football should be. So I think this is what Allegri spoke about so well, and it's something that I feel so strongly about personally speaking. But yeah, I do hope that, I don't think that, I mean, he'll take any job because he's very matter of fact, I think, about it. But I do, as a Juventus fan, would love to see him back at Juve or at a big, huge club, Real Madrid, United, whatever it is.
As seamlessly as you went from Mr. Gasparini to Mr. Allegri, that's where the seamlessness stops, because we're going to end about pineapple on pizza. I mean, there's no way I could get from Allegri to... I'm sure I could, but I don't have that right now. So why? Why just throw that in? Okay, so here's the deal. Sound like Joe Biden. Gazzetta reported that Inter's nutritionist was not happy with Romelu Lukaku when he first came over, and his dietary habits, similar to mine, in that he found out that Mr. Lukaku decided he liked pineapple on a pizza. Now, the Italians, Nikki, Mina, they don't like that. Dan Thomas does, but he's not on this podcast and probably will not watch it, so there's an insignificance there. Pineapple, pizza. Lukaku no longer takes pineapple on a pizza. That's the right thing to do.
The point is more of the article that he probably shouldn't have been eating as much pizza and carbonara pasta. Yeah. But what was interesting to me, you're right, as an Italian, was that these items, first of all, yes, there might be that party of things, these are things a footballer shouldn't be eating, but the nature of the items was just wrong for Italy. Pineapple on pizza is wrong. There's a fantastic, I can't remember the name of the people who did it, fantastic skit you can find online where, skit's the wrong word, a fantastic hidden camera prank some Italians did where they started delivering pineapple on pizza to people in Naples and it gets very heated. And also, sort of under the radar, it was said in the article that he was eating carbonara with cream in it. Well, any Italian will tell you carbonara does not have cream in it. So never mind the fact that that's heavy food that you probably shouldn't eat. And yes, apparently he's lost something like 16 pounds was what the article claimed, which is a lot. But I think he also needs some help understanding Italian cuisine if he's going to have the unhealthy things.
Well, he just needs to watch Stanley Tucci on CNN, his little trip around Italy. He'll know all about no carbonara with cream and everything else and risotto and arancini, but 16 pounds is decent. I'm glad he's got a decent diet now, but they're always going to sort him out. And it's kind of working on the pitch. They're getting the results from this, aren't they?
I think that I have not always been the greatest supporter of Antonio Conte's ways. But one thing you do have to credit him for is that he is very good at talking to players and seeing where their lifestyles don't mesh with what it is that he wants to get out of them as a player. And I think that he is very good at, you know, changing nutrition, ensuring better training routines, perhaps almost too strong training routines. But this is one of the reasons why Inter have got a very, let's say, a side that hasn't really had too many absences due to muscle injuries or anything like that, the way that you've seen other sides have to focus with so many and try to overcome so many absences that Inter haven't had to deal with so much. And I do think that the way that he handles nutrition, that his communication with the players and ways to make them better is one of the, you know, it's first rate, frankly speaking. And I think that Lukaku under him is not just changed off the pitch, but on the pitch in every way, his lifestyle, the way that he handles the ball, and his growth in Italy has been, frankly, quite remarkable. He is very much the poster child of this Inter, this great Inter that is likely to win another Scudetto. So for that, I have to credit Antonio Conte.
Nikki, give me your perfect pizza.
Oh, I'm often super boring with pizza. I think just a simple, good margherita with a bit of bufala is often the way to go, to be honest.
Mina?
I'm a mushroom girl, so funky.
I'm going to have pineapple on mine, and that's why I'm going to be sent to Siberia.
Get Matteo and Kay back in here ASAP.
Yeah, because they would kill you for that comment.
I'm sure they will let them, because good luck to Kay Murray, by the way, now dealing with a third child. So she's got two plus Matteo. So they'll be back in a fortnight after the international break. I'm off to Siberia to enjoy my pineapple on a pizza. Thank you to Nikki. Thank you to Mina. Thank you to Tom behind the scenes for pressing the buttons. And this is Cesare Prandelli, about to be replaced by Beppe Iacchini. Arrivederci.